Ren slipped past Sila's into the old records room, the heavy oak door yielding without a lock despite his earlier insistence otherwise. But Ren had seen the dust. It was undisturbed on the threshold, a smooth, gray skin unbroken by the drag of feet or the scuff of boots. Sila's had not entered the room for weeks, perhaps months. She had pushed past him, not with force, but with the quiet, inevitable persistence of water finding a crack in stone. He had stumbled back, surprised by her lack of hesitation, and she had slipped into the shadows of the archive. Now the door clicked shut behind her. The air here was colder than the hallway, smelling of dry rot and the faint metallic tang of old iron. The shelves stretched up into the darkness, packed with ledgers, correspondence, and the brittle remnants of 3 decades of business. Ren did not turn on the light. She did not need to. She had brought a lantern, its flame flickering low, casting long, trembling shadows against the walls. Sila's followed her in. He did not close the door. He left it ajar, a breach in the boundary, a signal that he intended to make a scene. "You are trespassing," he said. His voice was low, but it carried the rough edge of someone who had spent the day shouting over machinery or shouting at customers. "In your father's house, in his records." "It is my house now, Sila's." Ren kept her voice level. She moved to the nearest shelf, her fingers brushing the spines of the books. They were leather-bound, cracked and faded, labeled in her father's precise, angular hand. "And these are our records, as partner, as heir." Sila's laughed. It was a harsh, barking sound that seemed out of place in the quiet tomb of the archive. He stepped closer, invading her space, the smell of tobacco and stale whiskey clinging to his coat. "Partner, is that what you call it? You come back here after 2 years, after letting me hold the fort, after letting me pay the bills when your father's heart gave out, and you play the matriarch." "I didn't ask you to pay the bills," Ren said. She pulled a ledger from the shelf. It was heavy, bound in dark blue cloth. The title was stamped in gold leaf that had long since dulled, 1898-1902. "I asked you to keep the books. There is a difference." "There is no difference," Sila's snapped. He grabbed the ledger from her hands. She did not resist. He held it out, shaking it slightly as if it were a bird with a broken wing. "There is only survival, Ren, and you think you can survive on principles, on the shiny brass and the fresh flowers. You think Oakhaven cares about your father's legacy. They care about the price of a casket. They care about whether we show up when their loved ones die. And if we don't show up, if we go under, who do you think they'll blame? You, the grieving niece, the amateur." Ren watched him. She saw the tension in his jaw, the way his eyes darted to the door, then back to her. He was afraid. Not of her, but of what she might find, of what she had already found. "I found the discrepancies," she said. Sila's froze, the ledger lowered slightly. "Discrepancies." "In the ledger, the payments for urns that were never delivered, the fees for services that weren't rendered, the ash." He straightened up, his expression hardening. The fear receded, replaced by a familiar, defensive arrogance. "Ash, yes, Ash, your father was a practical man. He understood the economics of grief. He understood that people don't want to see the bodies. They want to believe they are gone. Cleanly, completely." "They want the truth," Ren said. "The truth," Sila's stepped forward, closing the distance between them. He was taller than her, broader, and he used his size to loom. "The truth is that the mill closed. The truth is that the town is starving. The truth is that your father kept this business alive when everyone else would have sold the land and run. He saved us, Ren. He saved me. And now you want to burn it all down because you found a few missing pounds." "He sold bodies," Ren said. The words hung in the cold air, stark and ugly. "To Birmingham, to the medical school. He traded our neighbors' remains for profit." Sila's face twisted. For a moment, she saw something raw beneath the bluster, a flash of shame, quickly masked by anger. "He traded them to keep the lights on, to keep food on the table, to keep you in that pretty dress, walking around like you're better than us because you went to school in London." "I am not better than you," Ren said, "but I am not complicit." "Complicit?" Sila's laughed again, but this time it was bitter, hollow. "You live in the house he built. You wear his name. You sit at his desk. You are complicit in everything that happened here. You just didn't know. Ignorance is a shield, Ren, but it has an expiration date, and yours just ran out." He tossed the ledger onto a nearby table. It landed with a heavy thud, kicking up a cloud of dust. "You think you can fix this? You think you can expose the truth and the town will thank you? They will destroy you. They will destroy this family. Because the truth is not a gift, Ren. It is a weapon, and you do not have the strength to wield it. Ren looked at the ledger. Then she looked at Sila's. She saw the loose tie, the rolled-up sleeves, the sweat on his upper lip. He was not just defending the business. He was defending himself. He had been part of it. He had known. He had helped. How much? She asked. Sila's blinked. What? How much did you take? How much of the money went to you? Sila's eyes narrowed. That is none of your business. It is my business. It is our business. The business we inherited. I kept the books, Sila's said, his voice dropping to a whisper. I handled the payments. I made sure the right people were paid. I made sure the supply continued. Your father, he couldn't do it alone. He was weak. He hesitated. I didn't. So you were the enforcer, Ren said, the one who did the dirty work. I was the one who kept us afloat, Sila's roared. He slammed his hand against the wall. The sound echoed through the small room, sharp and violent. While you were off in London, dreaming of a life you couldn't afford, I was here. I was making the choices. I was carrying the burden. And now you come back with your moral superiority and your pristine conscience and you want to throw it all away. For what? For a few names in a book. For a few widows who won't even remember their husbands' faces. Ren felt a chill run down her spine. It was not just the cold of the archive. It was the realization of what she was facing. Sila's was not just a greedy partner. He was a believer. He believed in the necessity of the crime. He believed that he was the hero of this story, the one who had sacrificed his integrity to save his family. You're wrong, she said. It's not about the money, it's about the dead. They deserve respect. Their families deserve the truth. Respect, Sila's sneered. Respect is a luxury. We are not wealthy, Ren. We are survivors. And survival requires compromise. It requires silence. He stepped closer again, his face inches from hers. She could see the pores in his skin, the gray stubble on his chin, the yellow tint to his eyes. He smelled of fear now beneath the whiskey. Leave the ledger, he said. Go upstairs, polish the brass, arrange the lilies, do your duties, and I will forget this. I will pretend you never found anything. But if you pursue this, if you try to expose us. He trailed off. He didn't need to finish the threat. It hung in the air, heavy and suffocating. Ren looked at him. She saw the desperation in his eyes, the terror of a man who knows he has built his life on a foundation of sand. She felt a surge of pity, quickly followed by a cold, hard resolve. I won't leave it, she said, and I won't forget. Sila's stared at her for a long moment. Then he turned and walked out of the room, leaving the door open behind him. The lantern flame flickered, casting long shadows across the shelves. Ren stood alone in the darkness, the silence pressing in on her ears, the weight of the past settling onto her shoulders like a shroud. She picked up the ledger. It was heavy in her hands, denser than it had any right to be. She opened it to the first page. The ink was faded, but the handwriting was clear. October 14th. Mail, 61, cardiac failure. Service, standard cremation. Fee, £18. Her finger traced the words. Arthur Gable. Mrs. Gable, waiting for a letter that would never come. The urn on the mantelpiece, too light to be real. She closed the book. She blew out the lantern. The silence in the room was absolute. Yet the ledger's weight pressed against her palms, with the cold, unyielding insistence of a stone left too long in the frost.